Session number 9314, Major Henry Hill, Part 1.
Could you explain the circumstances in which you went to Vietnam?
Yes. I was, at the time, the brigade major of 26th Gurkha Brigade in Manao. And I had previous experience of the French army. In fact, I'd been to the Ecole de Guerre, and I was selected by GHQ Farrell to go up to Indochina and spend 6 weeks with the French army up there, and then of course come back and make the usual report. So I went up, of course, by plane and went to Saigon, where we had an embassy who was a very pleasant military attaché, and called Charles Graham. Can you stop for a moment? And he looked after me, and I was then handed over to the French army, who received me extremely kindly and really let me look at, as far as I know, anything which I wanted to see.
Had you been given a detailed brief as to what you were going to look for before you flew out to Saigon?
No, I was just sent up there to do the best I could, really.
What year was this?
I'm trying to remember. I can pinpoint it for you in another way, and that is, I was there just before the French army pulled out of Hanoi. In fact, I think they pulled out while I was still there, but of course not up in the north, down in the south in Saigon. That'll deal with it. It's a pity, isn't it, this is just comment by the way, that the reports which people wrote on these visits have never been taken care of. They've all, as you know, disappeared. We couldn't get in with the one on this at all. And you were expected to write a very full report, which indeed I did, and which I saw in the War Office when I came back. But there it is. So we're remembering things which were 30-odd years ago, and well, it's not all that easy. Everything which has happened in between. Anyway, I started off in Saigon and did the French GHQ, which I thought was very efficiently run and very economically run. And one of the things I put that down to is that every staff officer in the GHQ had a secretary. And that, of course, multiplied the amount of useful work he could do by at least two, instead of writing things out by hand and sending off to a pool of typists and getting them back. He had a girl who acted as a secretary, sat in the room with him, he dictated stuff to her, got it back straight away. I was very impressed by that, and I thought it was very economical in the use of trained manpower. Later, when I came back from going up north, I went and had a special look at the Foreign Legion headquarters there, because I'd been with the 2nd Foreign Legion Regiment up in the north, and they gave me a very efficient batman. So I just thought, when I get back, I'll check on this chap's records. And there's only one thing they wouldn't let me see, and that is who he really was. And they said that's confidential between him and us. But here you are, here are his records. You can see when he joined the Legion, when he came out here, all his vaccination records and everything. I was very, very impressed with it, very efficiently done. And perhaps I might say a few general words about my journeys there. It's a very large country, Vietnam, and very long and thin, a lot of it. And it's an excellent example of our old friend Lawrence's thing in the Encyclopedia Britannica, because they had a political idea, all right. They had a regularly organized army against them, very much so. And of course they had an easy getaway because they had this very long open frontier which they could get across without any trouble at all. And in fact that's why they really made so little progress. The north, they tried to do a Maginot Line at one time because that's where they were having most people infiltrating and exfiltrating, if I may use such a word. And they built a number of sort of Maginot Line bases. But of course the communist guerrillas merely walked between them, so that really didn't help frightfully much. Well, I was sent up to the north, at Hanoi, based in Hanoi, which I didn't think was a very impressive headquarters.
Why was that?
Well, because it was just struck me as they'd all gone to seed a bit. Shenzhen, a bit shoddy. But, you know, headquarters differ like regiments in some ways, but I didn't think it was frightfully good.
So this is just a question of atmosphere, was it, in the headquarters?
Yes, and general efficiency, and, you know, smartness of chaps around the town, and I didn't form a very high impression of it. And I was then sent off to the second foreign legion regiment, the Deuxième Étrangère, who were a splendid body of men, and I spent quite a time with them, 2 or 3 weeks. And I was much surprised, having, you know, coming from Malaya, where you had really to work hard to catch sight of a CT, to find that up there there were really pitched battles going on. And while I was with the Deuxième, they did a full-scale sort of First World War-style attack on a village. It was rather amusing, really, because I was with battalion headquarters. And off we went about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 hours before dawn, and we trudged along. And the country there consists of rice fields divided by big bunds, which were about 7 or 8 feet high and sloping. And eventually we got to where battalion headquarters was supposed to be, and we all sat down. I put my back against the bund and gazed into space, and suddenly as the sun came up I saw that it was glinting on something which looked like bayonets to me. So I tapped the adjutant on the shoulder. I said, "What's that?" He said, "Christ, I don't know." And he said, "My God, it's the assault companies." And they'd come trying to get battalion headquarters in the line of attack, which caused, of course, a great alarm among the people in battalion headquarters, particularly as they discovered that the wireless wouldn't work. So they all this way. So they couldn't get in touch with the attacking companies to tell them not to mow us all down. Eventually they did get through to them in a roundabout way, but I must say it still was a rather nervous moment, because when people are advancing to the attack they're inclined to shoot anything which moves and not ask questions first. However, they did get through us all right.
What sort of formation were they in for their advance to contact?
They were an open line formation, just as I say, like first of all, a formal attack in the second World War, you know, two platoons up. I think they had four platoons. I think they had three up and one back, as far as I remember. And there were two battalions, so it was quite an extensive lot of chaps bearing down on this wretched village. And I tried very hard to see if there was anybody shooting at them from the village. It's one of these things where one's imagination is inclined to run riot, betray one a bit. I think that there were one or two bursts of machine gun fire from the village as these chaps advanced. I didn't see anybody on our side wounded. And then in due course we got up and moved forward into the village. Now, the legionnaires were mostly German, a very large proportion of Germans, because, of course, this was not all that long after the end of the war. And they had attached to them, rather like the catcoms we talked about in Korea, they had attached to them a number of soldiers from the Vietnamese army who were used for searching villages, because all these villages were very heavily excavated. There were all sorts of dugouts, covered trenches, and so on. And it was really very difficult, even if you knew there were some Viet Cong in the village, actually to find them, because they nip around these trenches and so on. However, they did catch two or three of them, whom they proceeded to torture, I'm afraid, in a brutal fashion. The legions are well known for that. And they apparently, these chaps, managed to convince the legion that there was really virtually nobody in the village at all. So they packed up in disgust and went back to their base.
When the attack went in, was it purely infantry? Did they have any mortar or artillery?
No, it was purely infantry. They did have mortars, but they didn't use them on that occasion.
When they advanced in, did they shoot as they were moving forward?
Yes, they did. Yes. What at? I wouldn't like to say, but they did. They loosed off their guns, all right. And
did they actually move in at a steady pace, or did they rush in?
Well, they moved in at a steady pace, in a traditional fashion. Then when they got about 100 yards away, somebody let out a yell, and they all shouted and charged in, firing and so on. That's what made it so difficult to see, to say really, whether there was any fire from the Viet Cong in the village, because these chaps were bashing away. And of course their line didn't keep perfectly straight, and it was quite difficult to see what was going on.
And it was just a straight advance across the paddy and then straight into the village.
That's it. Yes.
What was the village like? How big was it? What were its buildings?
It was quite a big village, very severely damaged by previous fighting. Nobody, except any Viet Cong there were, nobody living there, except a few people who sort of hung on and lived in these dugouts. And of course they were thoroughly suspect, because it was generally considered, probably rightly, that they couldn't possibly live there without the goodwill of the Viet Cong. But there are people who just stuck to their houses and said, we're not going to go, and if we get killed, well, there it is.
And how were the actual members of the Viet Cong distinguished from these villagers then? How did they pick them out?
Well, you may well ask. They didn't, really. I think the real test is if they caught somebody with a rifle in his hand, they'd assume he was a Viet Cong. Because the chaps of the prisoners, which I saw, were just wearing sort of ordinary clothes which anybody might wear. And there was nothing to show to look at them that they were Viet Cong. But I was told that they'd been caught in a dugout and that there were weapons there. And they were satisfied they weren't ordinary villagers, but they were members of the Viet Cong.
So they just hadn't been quick enough on their feet?
That's right, yes. They just hadn't been quick enough on their feet.
What sort of condition were they in when you saw them?
They seemed to me to be in pretty reasonable condition. They didn't look starved or emaciated or anything like that. None of them was wounded. I'm afraid they were all shot in the end.
What, on the spot?
On the spot. There was.
Did the Legion make a show of doing that as a propaganda gesture, or did they just take them quietly behind a...
They took them quietly behind a thing. I never actually saw it done, but I understood that's what happened. There was really nobody to make a propaganda gesture to, you see, because all the people, the civilians who the few who hung around the village, they went aground as quick as they could because they, as I've said, knew they were seriously suspect, and they didn't want to join the gang who were going to get shot, so they kept out of the way as much as they possibly could.
When the prisoners were being interrogated, was this done by the Legionnaires or was it done by the Vietnamese who were attached to them?
It was done by a combination of the two. They wouldn't let me watch it. I think they thought I might put in an unfavourable report, which indeed from the very little I did manage to see I certainly would have done. But it was they had these chaps attached to them. And I think by and large the rule was the Legionnaires beat the chaps up and the Vietnamese asked them the questions. Well, that was one operation we did several like it. And
how did the Legionnaires behave towards the civil population of the village, those who weren't actually caught with weapons?
They behaved all right to them, I think.
They didn't grab any of them for interrogation or anything like that?
Not that I saw. But they may well have sent some of their Vietnamese chaps to go and talk to them and so on. But I think they had cottoned on to the idea that they'd more or less got to try and keep on the right side of the civilian population, or they'd never get any information out of them. If they sort of beat up the first chap, they saw the others would disappear. Of course, it was a big country and very difficult to find anybody in at all. So they were pretty good about that. And, you know, dishing out cigarettes, the usual sort of thing. But they had big problems with intelligence there to get them. And they did small operations too, particularly trying to catch people putting mines on the main roads, which was an absolute menace.
I was going to ask how you actually got from the Legion's base to the start line for this attack. Was that by motor transport?
Oh, can you stop it a moment? I think, as far as I can recollect, is that I certainly went by transport. I think in the regimental intelligence officer's jeep. I've got an idea that the Legionnaires marched. It wasn't a terrific distance, about 10 miles, I think. But I think they marched because, apart from other things, I don't think they had sufficient transport to do anything else. But I certainly went there in a vehicle.
You say these chaps were mainly German, the Legionnaires. What sort of average age were they?
About sort of 30, 35, that sort of thing. In the second, in the deuxième, there were quite a lot of ex-sailors who had been in the German submarine service, who were very interesting chaps to talk to. I speak a bit of German. I talked to all these chaps, and they all had some interesting experiences out in the Atlantic and all over the place. Then when they got back to Germany, they didn't like what they saw, and a great deal of them joined the Legion, which they liked. A number of them intended to stay on for as long as they could.
Did they express any opinion of the way the war was going, the war they were fighting up in the north of Vietnam at that time?
No. They really took the view that we are mercenaries, professionals, if you like. We are here to fight, and that's it.
Did you form an opinion of their level of skill and professional competence when you saw them doing these operations?
I thought they were damn good. I thought they were very good. Certainly much better than the French army units I saw. But that's rather the pride of the Legion. And there's no doubt they are pride of it. As I say, I had a very good batman. And he was certainly proud of being in the Legion and liked it and, you know, spoke well of his officers and was a thoroughly good chap.
Was he also a German?
He was a German, yes. He was a German.
What did you think of their weapons and clothing and equipment? Was it suitable, the sort of thing they were doing?
Oh, yes. They were well clothed and equipped and so on. My recollection is that they had quite a lot of American stuff. I'm pretty sure that was so. because of course this was getting near the time when the Americans were going to come in. But the real problem in the north there was they couldn't control the main roads. Every night they were mined, and it was sort of the first routine thing every day was to go out and clear the roads. The French, as I've remarked before, rather like the Americans, they haven't got this idea that you've got to dominate the ground by patrols. I mentioned this when we were talking about Corral. And I'm told that when the Australians and New Zealanders were up there, that you never saw a Viet Cong in their areas at all, because they were out all night, and if one of them put his nose up, they knocked it down. But that's not these people's. I'm in the Jersey, and that wasn't their idea of setting about things. They were far more formal and so on.
They preferred a set piece operation.
They preferred the set piece operation, and that's very much a sort of French army thing too. They don't believe in having small fighting patrols which go around and dominate the area so that nobody can put their nose up.
What sort of camp did the Legion have? Was it a fortified camp, or were they just living in a fairly civilised peacetime environment?
Oh no, not at all. They had battalion areas, and I think I'm right in saying mainly one or two company detachment camps, which were all strongly fortified, because the Viet Cong there were able to produce larger units than they ever could in Malaya after the very beginning, because if they produced anything over 100 men in Malaya, they'd turn the troops onto the Gurkhas, you know, and they'd hammer them into the ground and split them up, and that was that. But they could produce a quite big organisations there. Well, then we want to remember the Dien Bien Phu, which must be around about this time. Not sure whether it was before or afterwards. But they certainly, some of these camps used to be overrun, and particularly if they weren't well guarded, all the chaps on duty got sloppy. And there was a certain amount of trouble with the Vietnamese troops who were with them being penetrated by the Viet Cong, and then turning the place over, you know, opening the gates at night and all that sort of thing. So it really it was quite tricky. The regimental headquarters was a big camp, and it held various ancillary units as well. I think there was an armoured car squadron there, and some gunners, and some engineers, I think. So that was quite a big place.
What were relations like between the Legion and these Vietnamese who were attached to them?
Well, I think they treated them like, and they thought they were a necessary evil, really. I think in some cases they would say, good, I don't see much of it, you know, it's difficult. Because they knew they couldn't get on with that. But I don't think they relied on them much for the fighting. It was merely for more for intelligence work and that sort of thing. That's the way they used them. But the regiment commander had quite a bit of experience of the British Army, and the thing rather worked on British lines. They used to have a band night once a month. I was there for one of the band nights, or they laid one on because I was there, I don't know which. And it was all very well done, and one amusing incident which happened, talking of band nights and things, when the port had gone round once or twice, if I may put it that way, I heard the regimental commander say to the brigade major, go down and clear the brothel, we'll go down and have some fun, which amused me because I couldn't imagine it British brigadier, I think. So after about half an hour, down we went to the regimental brothel. And I felt somewhat embarrassed, really, because I felt I had to uphold the good name of the British Army, but on the other hand, I mustn't show that I disapproved of what the French did. So after a bit, I thought, they want some fun. I don't think that was some fun. So I said, on band nights in the British Army, we have a thing called mess games. Part of the idea being to make sure that everybody remains reasonably sober, and it's good fun anyway. So they said, oh, well, yes, go on, we'll have a go. And the first one I showed them was the one which is known as bottle walking, where you get a bottle in each hand, stand with your back to a wall, and then you walk forward on the bottles. And the object of the game is to put one bottle as far away from the wall as you can, and then get back into the upright position, which of course is by no means easy when you're coming back on only one bottle. And two or three the French officers did this, because by and large they only have French officers in the foreign legions. Very rare to come across a foreign officer, but they do have them, but they're rare. And eventually the colonel thought that he ought to have a go to show what a good chap he was. And so he got his bottles, and when he was at full stretch, the madame, who was a huge, fat Vietnamese woman, said, I can't stand this any longer, and jumped and sat on his back. So he crashed to the floor, losing all his wind. And that absolutely made the evening. We got on like wildfire after that. But
what sort of place was this brothel? Was it in a permanent building, or was it just a...
I think it was a proper building, all right. I've got an idea. It was made of wood. I didn't really look round it very much. We went into the sort of central bar and drinking place. I naturally didn't go down the back stairs to see what went on down there, although the adjutant did, who was in love with one of the girls. But we stayed upstairs and drank and tried to behave.
Apart from the madame, didn't any of the other girls join in the...
Oh, yes, rather, yes. They thought it was all great fun. They'd never seen anything like us before.
Were these girls all local, or were some of them...
All local. Mm. All local.
So they'd obviously been locally recruited.
Oh, yes. I saw two of the latest recruits. It was rather horrible, really, because they were very young girls, and I thought quite unsuitable to be in such a place. And it rather disgusted me.